for the first hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. What a warm day in Santa Cruz today.
Yeah, this is definitely what you call glow weather.
Yeah, even more in the mountains. I mean, we're just like 10 degrees cooler down here.
Yeah, and I'm drinking about 10 more cups of water every day, and it's coming right out of my skin.
Yeah, we have an incredibly smoky view up in Boulder Creek as well with all the fires going on.
Right, there are an awful lot of fires going on right now. Boy, very grateful for the incredible people we have who dedicate themselves to our safety fighting these fires.
Yeah. And Bobby, we have Bobby on the line, our science correspondent in San Francisco. Hey, Bobby, how you doing?
Hey, good. Yeah. It's a sunny day here. Yesterday was a little overcast, and then we got the lightning.
Oh, the last that few days. Storm, yeah. Man.
That was so special. Oh, I love the lightning storm.
Wow. Yeah, it's incredible because I have skylights and I'm in the living room and I can look toward, we have skylights in the staircase in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the house would just light up and then I'd count how many seconds away the thunder would come.
Yeah.
So some were pretty close and then some were like 10 miles away, I guess. And then it sounds like stereo because sometimes they're on the left side of the house and then they're on the right side of the house. It was
pretty epic. Yeah. Did you get any photographs? Did you try to shoot it at all?
No, there was clouds here, so I really didn't have great view from that because I was right in the clouds.
Yeah, well, we went out on our deck. We got some epic shots.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, check my Facebook. You'll see
okay, a couple okay. posted. Wow, fantastic.
Yeah. There was a one point where it sounded like a tornado, you know, where the winds were picking up and whisking around. Then I heard stories that there might have been a tornado in Ben Lomond, the next town over.
Wow.
Yeah.
There were definitely tornadoes on the California-Nevada border.
Oh,
because they
yeah.
were from the fires and different, yeah, they're creating their own tornadoes, yes.
Well, we all survived, and we're ready to look at the world news here in our Dr. Future vein. We have a guest on the second hour, so we're going to try to do the COVID stuff for this first half hour, then space news for the second half hour. You sent me one story about how the feds authorized a new saliva-based coronavirus test. That sounds very interesting.
Yes, the NBA basketball had been using it so far, and it came out of Yale.
Saliva-based, right? So much shorter time.
Yeah, so they're kind of targeting toward college students, I guess, of that age. Because a lot of them don't like this when they have to go through the nasal pharynx back to, you know.
Yeah, I heard it's like scraping your brain, you know. Not very pleasant.
So the saliva test might, they claim that they're trying to get the price of the tube and the testing material down to $3 or $4. But then it is a PCR test, so they have to rush it to a lab, and the lab supposedly, if it's close by, can do it within 3 hours.
In 3 hours, yeah.
Yeah. But they can do batches, like they can do 92 and tests.
3 hours, okay, well that's better. I mean, I like the idea of 5 minutes.
Yes.
But 3 hours is certainly a lot better than 3 days or, you know, or longer, what it seems to be taking. With the other one.
And that one did get FDA approval, and so doctors won't be sued if they use this test, apparently.
They won't be sued.
Yeah.
Okay, so it actually has some validity from the Fed's point of view.
Right. But what's more exciting is this other test, which is on the links page. It's the last one. It's the E25 Bio company, and they have a rapid test that's only 15 minutes, and it's a home test.
Mm.
As opposed to going to some place that's going to rush it off to a lab and you have to wait 3 hours.
Right, right.
In 15 minutes, you just take this stick of, it's a paper strip, kind of like a pregnancy test kind of thing. In the video, you can see it on the links page.
Hmm.
You just put it in this little vial and you let it sit there for 15 minutes and it will tell you. It's fairly accurate. But if you do another one, if you do two or three, then it's almost 100% accurate.
So your accuracy goes way up.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that the interview between Dr. Selhut, how do we say his name, Selhut?
Schwett.
Dr. Schwett, and the founder of this company, they were talking about the test and the efficacy test and just the comparing of apples and oranges between the test for antibodies versus the test for the virus itself. And one of the points that they made that I thought was so important that people don't really discuss is the difference in the use of the test between the diagnostic tests, which need to be super high accuracy, and the public policy tests, which need to give people the confidence that if they feel bad, they can either stay home from work or they don't have the virus, so maybe they can risk going to work. Even if they don't feel bad, they have certainty because it's an instant test. And how to hold that public policy test to the same standard as the diagnostic test is maybe not really that useful. So it was one of the points they made in that interview.
Yeah. Also, this is not to replace one test or the other. The founder, Dr. Herrera, he's saying it probably used in conjunction with the PCR test that the NBA, that test that Yale has just come out with.
Mm-hmm.
So you would use that in combination, but...
Yeah, he actually made a point that saliva tests probably have, in a certain sense, a lot more to contend with because saliva can be full of a lot more things that make it more complex to analyze, whereas the nasal test that Dr. Herrera has developed is a little more focused on the antibodies and maybe simpler, cheaper, more useful, you know, easier to dispense as a do-it-yourself home test.
Yeah, and the pricing. I think right now it's the whole test and completing the test. He's saying it's under $5, but he says in quantity, you can get it down to probably a dollar.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that test. Yale test, they think, is going to be around $10 a pop. The cost is somewhere around $2 to $3.
Yeah, the testing equipment is $2 or $3 right now, but then the lab is going to charge the $6 or $7.
Yeah. Oh. Any plans to make lots of copies of the test in the near future?
Yes, he's trying to get some money.
Get some money for
approval.
That.
Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
Preliminary stages here.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. Well, we'll be right back after our commercial break. Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. Bobby Wilder, our science correspondent, on the line from San Francisco. Now, Mrs. Future, you did point out during the break that this T-cell immunity versus antibodies is quite an interesting
issue. I love the evolving educational process of studying the COVID virus and the multitude of approaches that people are taking to preserve your health, prevent getting sick, and to understand your immune system better. And we have a couple of our favorite bloggers, medical bloggers, Dr. Campbell and Dr. Schwepp this week were educating people about how the immune system works, right?
And the T-cell immunity.
Especially the T-cell immunity. And, you know, Bobby, do you want to maybe say something about that for people's edification?
Yeah, what should we know about T-cell immunity?
Well, most of the studies have been focusing on antibodies and trying to build up your antibodies, but the T-cells, there's several types of T-cells. The ones that we think of are usually the killer T-cells that go out, macrophages. They go out and just go out and destroy viruses and bacteria and things like that. Oh. But then there's another part of a T-cell, they're called memory T-cells. And that's been overlooked recently. And it turns out there is immunity that you can get if these T-cells can remember these viruses from the past, and they kind of re-stimulate, they send information, they re-stimulate the B-cells to actually produce the antibodies. So they're the brains of the system, the memory cells, that T-cells that remember this. And it turns out, yes, you can have long-term immunity if you can just train those memory cells, T-cells, to remember.
They seem to remember better than the antibody response, it seems.
Well, it's not the antibody's job to remember. It's the antibody's job to basically fight the virus. And then the T cells, their job is to recognize the virus and kill the cells that are too weak to fight so that the virus doesn't keep spreading. And then remember what the virus looks like. Right? That's what the T cells do. They're a little different.
Right. So the antibodies are actually nanomolecules, nanoparticles. And all their, what they do is they just connect to, let's say we're targeting the spike protein on the ACE2 receptor on the virus itself.
So a good thing to target.
Yeah. So they're just kind of like, they're just sticking to that and disabling the function of that, the virus, from actually going into the cell itself.
You know, John Campbell describes it very vividly, and I have my own little story that I have visualized based on his understanding of it, that these little viruses, these spikes, are kind of like they're ticklers, and they tickle the cells to try and get in. And if the antibodies are activated, then they basically put gloves on the ticklers so that the ticklers don't work.
Well, yeah. Gloves on like a like a condom.
Yeah, you could think of it a condom, a glove, something that prevents the spike from actually getting into the cell. So
right.
Yeah.
I said, yes, let's make condoms for the virus.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, I really highly recommend the most recent discussion of the immune system by Dr. John Campbell, because he gives just a very detailed, clear description of the B cells, the T cells, the way that the various parts of our immune system work.
For the uninitiated on this, how would you define, how would you describe John Campbell and his daily
broadcast? Well, John Campbell is a teacher who has a background as a, he's a medical professor whose background is as a nurse.
Teaches nurses as well.
He teaches nurses, and he teaches epidemiology, virology. He teaches people to really understand the medical model and the public health policies and the way that the body is actually functioning and the way different kinds of treatments work with the body. So it's just really elucidating for people who want to take responsibility for their own health to really understand things from a medical professional who speaks in a way that's very clear.
Who has also addressed preventative measures as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was one of the very first people to say that vitamin D levels are important and people need to pay attention to them, because people with low vitamin D tend to suffer worse than people who don't have a deficiency.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very elucidating report today that you were tuning into.
I thought it was one of his best. It really was so clear. B cells, I've always wondered what B cells, well, turns out B cells are the immune cells that are generated in your bones, and T cells are your immune cells that are generated in your thymus. So
that's good to know.
Yeah.
So that, I don't know if you remember, we were talking about saunas and the thymus, where the thymus is located, which is between the heart and the sternum in the chest. And I was suggesting, if you get into a sauna or if you're in the sunlight, or what I do is I have an infrared lamp and you can put it right on your chest, and you can actually, I get a little more energy from that exposure. It's very interesting how to stimulate the thymus and try and get more of the T cells out there moving around.
Well, the whole light therapy idea is quite fascinating. As a matter of fact, our guest in the second hour has had some experience that she'll be sharing with us.
Yeah, she has. Among her many talents, she is also a licensed light therapist.
For many years. Really into it. So I think it'd be fun to explore that. It's not something Western medicine has addressed too much.
Well, not so much in our country. I think it's taken off more in other places in Europe.
Yeah, more Germany.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a brave new world out there. We can do all kinds of new things with new technologies. We're just waiting for the science to back it up.
Yeah, so I'm also, in terms of tests, I'm waiting to hear some more news from that Israeli test that uses electromagnetics for looking at the frequency of the virus for identifying it. Apparently, it only takes about a minute or so to identify the virus. Have you heard about that, Bobby?
Yes. So I think somebody found that.
We were talking about that.
I'm looking for a breakthrough, because if that's the case, then all you need is a breathalyzer type test. You just breathe in the tube and you get results.
Right.
Within a minute.
Instead of halitosis, we're looking for your electromagnetic breath signature.
And, you know, let's face it, if we can test people if they're going into a venue like a stadium and it only takes a minute, it still will cause a line, but not nearly as bad as 15 minutes.
Well, and also if you can do something that people can do themselves instead of having to depend on a delayed lab report. A system that doesn't give you the information soon enough to be relevant.
If it takes a week to get the results, who knows who you've seen in that last week to nullify the results?
Mm-hmm.
It's so key.
And is the goal really public health or is the goal really just getting data on people? If it's health, then we should really be backing the tests that are
quick, fast, accurate
fast,
tests.
Cheap, give individuals the self-empowerment.
Right.
I think if we look at countries like India, you know, they're trying to come out with very inexpensive tests because they can't afford a $10 test, but they could probably afford
it. Necessity is the mother of invention, as they say.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in South Korea, they used a combination of this very low-cost test and the PCR test, and they were very successful in reducing the rate that way.
The combination. Right. So you've been
able to have
the wherewithal to do two tests.
In the early days of the Fauci-Burks press conferences, they made it very clear that they needed to use the antibody tests for the medical workers and the people who were on the front line who were dealing with exposed patients and diagnosing. And we needed the antibody tests for the public health sector with people who were less at risk, not showing symptoms or showing mild symptoms, but needing to know if they were infectious. So they really are two different populations.
There was a company on the East Coast, I'll have to look it up, but they had a combination test that tested both the antibody first, and then it also tested both the antibody and the antigen, which is the virus itself. And so the two tests we talked about earlier were antigen tests, or they just detect the virus.
Yeah, speaking of the antigen test, Dr. Herrera, who is, of course, has the test that detects the antibodies, that the time when the antibodies are most detectable is during the 5 days when people are infectious. That's when the viral load is the highest.
Hmm.
No. His is definitely an antigen test. It's not an antibody test. His nasal strip test, I think, or I could be wrong. I have to go back and look at this. Yeah.
Well, we have a commercial coming up, so you can get it, the information.
Yes. Okay.
All right. And we'll be back. And we've got callers on the line, so hang with us through the break. And we'll be right back with the Dr. Future Show.
Talk to you in a minute. Hey, welcome back to the show. Yes, Bobby was doing a little research while we were on the break.
Yes, does Dr. Herrera's test discover antigens, i.e. the virus, or antibodies, i.e. the body fighting the virus?
Yeah.
They're antigens, yeah.
Oh, so it looks for viral load.
Yes, yes.
Okay, thanks for correcting me. I was a little fuzzy there.
Okay, well, that's what we do. We learn on the air, not afraid to be a fool in public.
That's right. Well, yeah. I do my best to make it simpler for everyone to understand. And boy, if I don't, then you can imagine there's a lot of people worse than me.
So we have a caller.
I try.
We have a caller, Mrs. Fisher.
We do. We've got Colonel Terry on the line. Hi, Colonel Terry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, beautiful, smart lady.
You always raise my self-esteem.
Do you like to learn on the air, too, Colonel Terry?
On the air, I'd like to, everyone who knows Mrs. Future is in love with her.
That's true. That's true. You'll learn as she learns.
Well, I'll tell you, I've gotten a little more controversial lately. Some of my friends are afraid that I'm affiliating with the dark side because I'm not completely convinced of the way that we're handling the coronavirus.
There's room for speculation.
Yeah.
But one thing's clear. It's making people sick, as Bobby can describe. It's contagious. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't dispute that. I'm really into keeping ourselves safe through knowledge and through having the best approach possible. But somehow I don't think that mandating masks and locking everyone, even healthy people, away from their livelihood is the correct approach. And I think we really need to be free to have that conversation. So.
Well, I would agree we should keep analyzing it. But apparently, smart lady, those countries and cities that have done the social distancing, mask wearing, and restricted coming and going have much lower rates of the spread of the virus. Mm. Does Bobby agree?
Yeah, it does appear. The whole thing is this thing about immunity and herd immunity. The problem is there's a lot more people, like 80% of the population, that doesn't get sick, and they're not sure what it is, but I have a hunch of what it might be. And that, it turns out, again, it's these T cells that we were talking about earlier. It turns out these T cells can be triggered not only by, let's say, SARS-CoV-1, which was 17 years ago in let's say, South Korea and Hong Kong, that virus, or there are four other coronaviruses that have the same spike protein. And if you get the T cells to remember one of those, you have immunity too. And you can these are long-term immunity. And so, yeah, so that's what I think. There's a larger population. And I think what we should focus on is people that are in elderly care and the frontline workers and people that are going to be exposed and teachers, and focus on them to make sure that they have immunity so that we can go with herd immunity without having to go down the vaccination route.
And I wanted to mention one other thing about today's report from Dr. Campbell, who's in the UK. He was reading a newly released study from the University of Washington that was all about immunity. I'm not really prepared to go into the details here. I want to listen to it again, but the University of Washington is one of the places where they're studying different kinds of immunobased therapies for people who have cancer and things. And they have done a study. There was a fishing boat with 120 people who were all tested and were found to not have SARS-CoV before they went out. And then they were tested when they came back, and there was some people who got it. But apparently, out of 103 people who got it, who were tested positive, something like 101 of them had very few symptoms and had some kind of pre-existing immunity. So it's a really interesting breakthrough study about the natural immunity that people have. So we'll do a little bit more research into that, and maybe we can talk about natural immunity next week.
Let me focus on my call questions to Robbie. Number one, ultraviolet light equipment. My highly competent, excellent dentist in Santa Cruz, who also happens to appear on KSCO sometimes, he's got equipment to kill ultraviolet light emanators in his offices now that he's confident are killing the virus.
Yeah.
I'm wondering Robbie's opinion on that and other household technologies we might buy and the restaurants might use as well. And then secondly, I heard that there are two variants of the COVID, Robbie.
There's a
Bobby. East Coast version from Italy and the West Coast version directly from China. Do you know about those? And will that make our treating this situation more complicated?
Yeah, I'll talk of the latter first, and then we'll go back to the first question. Yes, there are many different strains, and it seems like the killer strain came from Italy. That variant came out of Italy, and it seems like there's a higher death rate associated with that. And the one that we have here on the West Coast came from Wuhan directly, and it appears it's a milder form of it. As far as the spreadability, I think ours spreads more, or vice versa. What they have a different spread rate, but as far as the kill ratio, we have the better one here in the West Coast. Yes,
the healthier COVID here,
less COVID,
yeah. Yes, well, less likely to have that.
The kindler, gentler version.
Or it could be that, again, maybe we've had this version of this corona cold, and maybe we have better immunity here in the West Coast because we've been exposed to these other colds. That could be a possibility. And then back to the ultraviolet. Yes, if you can get ultraviolet C products, and apparently they were selling these wands, and also you can get air purifiers that have these little ultraviolet lamps inside of them, and they are effective. You want a lamp that produces C, but not the B waves, which are the lower frequency waves that causes suntans and skin basal cell skin cancers. You want to avoid the Bs if you can.
So when you go to buy one of these lights, is there some kind of rating that tells you which frequency it is?
You know, I saw this electronics guy out of England, and he was testing all these ones that are coming out of China. And he's saying like 90% of them, they weren't C, although they stated that they were C, were actually Bs, and you should wear goggles or sunglasses that block the B rays. Yeah.
Oh, so
what about those hand dryers in the public restrooms?
You want to avoid the hand dryers.
Because they also have the, it looks like a UV light that comes on in some of them along with the air.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Really?
Casa Nostra.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I heard that the blower just blows the virus into the bathroom and in the air, and it's so it kind of aerosolizes it.
I see. So
I heard paper's better.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other with the UV, I guess, and the hand dryer.
They were using those lamps in the New York subways. So that at night, they would actually sterilize by just taking this lamp and just going down the cars with the lamp. And also they did it in hospitals too.
Now, isn't there some kind of time exposure requirement? I mean, it's not just instant, right?
The simplest thing is this, 10 minutes of sunlight.
Yeah.
10 minutes of sunlight will destroy 99% of the viruses.
Right. Yeah.
That's good for cleaning your mask too, right? Put it in the sun.
Yeah, yeah. You just put it on your dashboard in your car for 10 minutes and it'll be sterilized.
Yeah, that's a good use of that heat in the car.
Right.
Yeah.
But those, back to Colonel Terry talking about his dentist. We had a guest a few weeks ago, Dr. Tom, who was utilizing some of that periodontal UV products to sterilize your mouth so that you can feel a little bit more safe. He kind of uses a mouthwash and the UV light.
And you've been trying that, right?
And I absolutely love it for my gums, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic product.
You have such a device at home?
I do. I do. I went and got the periodontal UV device that was being recommended by Dr. Tom, and I've been using it with my floss and my toothpaste and my mouthwash, and I can tell you, my gums are even happier than they were before, and they were pretty happy.
Wow. So it's another step in dental hygiene.
Yeah.
All right, smart lady, where do I find this product?
Alan was able to find it online. Let's see, maybe he can give you the link.
Yeah, we had an Amazon. There was one product that looks like it does the same thing that was much less expensive.
I want the one the smart lady got.
That'll cost you $100.
That's the $100 one.
Yeah, $100 on Amazon.
Let's see, do you remember what the name of it is?
I'll check. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what it is, it has a little charger unit that you leave plugged into a USB, and then it has a mouthpiece that is sort of shaped the way like the things that a dentist would stick in your mouth. It follows your teeth, and it's got a kind of a plastic or rubbery thing that you bite into. And then you take that mouthpiece and plug it into the power source that you keep charging, and then you have this mobile unit that is lighting up your mouth for 10 minutes.
Great. And what's the name of the product?
Send me an email. I'm not sure I have your email, but if you send it to future@ksco.com, I'll send you the link to the one that I have when I'm home and I can look at it. Okay?
And I'll send you more compliments.
Okay.
Great. Yeah. We need your email, Colonel Terry.
You all stay healthy.
Yes, it's good. All right. Well, thanks for the call. Yeah, but I do think that all of us should be doing as much as we can to stay healthy, and that viruses are real, and health is something that you can improve by taking good care of yourself.
All right. The $30 one is called Starlight Smile Gum Disease Treatment Periodontal. Starlight, S-T-A-R-L-I-T-E.
On Amazon.
Smile Gum Disease Treatment. And that's available. And it looks like it's pretty cool.
Yeah, but we need to measure if it's the C light or the B light.
Okay. Well, that's our next level of research on this.
Yeah, I never knew that was an issue.
C light reader.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can find one of these on Amazon.
All right. We'll be back.
Okay.
Back to Future Show.
Okay, we have only a few minutes for space news, but I want to just outline the headlines of this. And if you want to know more in detail, you can go to drfutureshow.com/links, and you can read more about all the things that we're talking about today. One thing is that NASA's about to complete an asteroid mission, complete final phases right now before their sample run. OSIRIS-REx will scoop up pieces of the asteroid Bennu for return to Earth. That's quite an interesting story.
And this is really novel because this is NASA's first asteroid
pickup.
Yeah. Right. It's the first time they're bringing something back from an asteroid.
Yeah. Another curious thing that's going on is that NASA's tracking a vast growing anomaly in the Earth's magnetic field.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This was in Science Alert this week. They're actively monitoring a strange anomaly in the Earth's magnetic field, a giant region of lower magnetic intensity. And it's in the skies above the planet, stretching between South America and Southwest Africa.
So we're talking about in our magnetosphere.
In the atmosphere, yes. And the vast developing phenomenon is called the South Atlantic Anomaly. And it's been around for a few years, but it's getting bigger, and it looks like it's dividing into two clumps of magnetic fields. It's analogous to like a dent.
We have a dent in our magnetic field.
Yeah.
I thought magnetic fields were kind of round.
Well, it's a rough analogy, but that it's less magnetism there, and it affects satellites as they pass through it in the ISS. And it also makes you more susceptible to other radiations that usually the magnetic field would protect you from. Protons from the sun, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, and apparently the origin of this anomaly is in the iron core of the Earth, that there's something going on 1,800 miles below the surface.
Yes. It seems to be a swirling ocean of molten iron in the Earth's outer core, which is thousands of kilometers below the ground. And that movement generates electrical currents that create the magnetic field, but it's not necessarily uniform. All right, so this huge reservoir of dense rock down there is about 1,800 miles below the African continent, and it disturbs the field's generation and creates this weakening. There's a denser rock down there. It's called the African Large Low Shear Velocity Province. Easy to remember, right?
Yeah.
ALLSVP.
I'm sure the Tesla Tech people know all about this because the iron core rotating in the center of the planet, giving rise to the magnetosphere, is kind of the domain of where all the Tesla Tech power comes from, right? It's the Earth as a giant battery.
Well, he used to think of the Earth as a capacitor.
Which
is similar to a battery, not bad, Mrs. Future. You know, it could just be charged faster.
Okay. Well, anyway, okay.
So we have interesting story,
anomalies in our magnetosphere.
Yeah, that could affect
stay tuned.
Magnetic things.
But we shouldn't be worried about a pole shift. It's not likely to be causing that, right? We're safe?
I think so. So far, you know, what do you think, Bobby? You were safe?
Well, I don't know if you saw that Nova series about 20 years ago. They were talking about a possible pole shift. And they were describing areas of the Earth like you were describing, where there's a lower magnetic field than normal.
Yeah.
And those areas would receive a lot of protons and neutrons from the sun, and you would be more susceptible to solar radiation.
Right.
And it was indicative of this precursor to the pole shift. kind of thing.
Okay, anyway. Well, I guess we should be afraid then. Here I was just about to think that everything would be fine. It was just a normal earth hiccup.
You want to be afraid, do you? Do you want to be afraid?
More fear, please.
Well, okay. Well, how about this story on the Pentagon's new UFO task force?
Oh, yes. There you go. Pentagon studying UFOs. Now we can really be afraid.
Aren't you afraid of aliens?
Are you kidding? I'm married to one.
I guess not all aliens are aliens.
No, I think many aliens are fairly tame. I think many of us are aliens. So I think we're doing our best to cohabitate the planet.
Well, three videos showing the U.S. Navy pilots encountering those fast-moving objects in 2017, 2018, the Tic Tac objects. You're familiar with that?
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. We've seen those, and those some of them are not. It was all revealed in 2018, but some of these were historical stuff that came 10 or 15 years earlier, and they're just revealing them, yes.
Right.
Yes, well, apparently last week, the U.S. Department of Defense announced the creation of a task force to analyze and understand the nature and origins of what they're calling UAPs, not UFOs, UAPs, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon.
Okay, yeah, UFOs has been... Yeah. Taken over. We don't want to call it UFOs anymore. We want it to be new, even though it's the same stuff that we used to call UFOs, but we've got a new task force, so we have a new name, UA.
Instead of flying, it's aerial.
Aerial, yeah. Right. Okay, yeah. Aerial.
Yeah, unidentified aerial phenomena.
Right. What I liked about this article, which is in space.com, is the way that they pulled back the wool from our eyes about why the Defense Department might be interested in studying UFOs. And it's not just a half-baked conspiracy theory that because they want to keep all the alien knowledge to themselves and prevent mass hysteria. But they actually have some really interesting military reasons why they want to.
Like, you got to think of it not as aliens, but maybe as the enemy.
Right. Aerial, unidentified aerial phenomenon.
As such, could there be the enemy messing with our technology?
Right.
You know, sort of pulsing it in some way that's creating these anomalous readings.
That's right. And we have to be aware that if our sensors are finding something, we gosh darn it better know what we're finding. Is there something wrong with our sensors?
Or somebody spoofing it?
Is somebody making our sensors see something that's not there?
Or is there some secret government project that we don't know about that's affecting our sensors?
Or did we figure out how to use this little anomaly because our sensors are kind of making something up that isn't really true? And are we using that data to spoof someone else so that they think that there's an anomaly?
Right.
But really, we're just making them think there's an anomaly.
When there actually isn't.
All there is a spoof. And if the sensors are picking up something real.
Yes.
Are they picking up someone else trying to spoof us? Inquiring minds at the Pentagon want to know.
Yes, man. So you got to eliminate all those things. And also, what does it reveal about maybe their technology?
That's right. If it's not them trying to spoof us, is it us discovering something about their technology?
Yes.
So,
and we got to make sure that it's not Russian or alien, Chinese or...
Yeah, we got to know who's trying to spoof
Iranian.
Us here.
Yeah.
It's really unidentified spoofing objects.
Right.
So there's lots of good reasons why the Pentagon is studying these unidentified aerial objects. And not just because of the final eighth reason, which is because it's possible that there may be authentic indicators of classified military activities to camouflage and mask the reports about foreign observers.
Well, it's very funny because I got a note from one of the friends of the show, Chris Altman, and he said that he was involved with this new study. He's a co-founder and director of a special projects with UAPX.
Oh, boy.
So we'll find out more next week.
All right. We'll see if we can get in touch with the mysterious Chris Altman.
The mysterious Christopher.
Yeah, he's married now. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
Well, he was very interested in finding the right woman last time we saw him, so I'm happy to hear.
Got married in Australia. He was, for those who don't know Chris, he was an astronaut candidate. and been very involved with aerospace and the whole space world for some time.
And yeah, he's an expert on quantum physics. That's what his PhD studies were.
Very good.
Geared toward, yeah.
Listen, in the last minute here, let's quickly go to our caller, Richard in Pacific Grove. Hi, Richard. You've got about a minute and a half.
How you doing,
How are
Richard?
You?
Okay.
Good.
Just very quickly, if you don't know a disease exists, can you die from it?
Yes, I'm sure you can, because knowledge is not a prerequisite for disease taking you out. In fact, ignorance is much more likely to cause your demise.
But does your belief system affect your health? I guess is
that's true too.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just seems like there are so many people wake up every morning and try and figure out what we're going to die from tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's that, too. I think if you think you're going to die, you're more likely to.
Well, there's a lot of fear. Yeah, a lot of fear going on. We're going to address that in the second
half. The power of suggestion.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. If you watch nightly news every night, and I used to, but I don't do it anymore. Yeah. If you used to watch nightly news almost every night, and I'm talking about ABC, CBS, NBC, they tell you about scientists just said, if you ate too much popcorn when you were 15 years old, your teeth could fall out, and you probably will die of strangulation.
Oh, you heard it here.
Follow. Yeah. All right, carry on, guys.
Thanks, Richard.
Yeah, thanks for the comic relief. We do watch mainstream. We watch NBC every night, CBS.
I just got an idea from Richard, though, that we could call it nightly hypnosis. Right?
Well, it's interesting to see how the news is being presented.
Yeah, but you've got three channels that all give you the same headlines and the same spin, and none of them give you any perspective that's like the brighter side of those stories. So,
well, have you said the kids' version of the NBC News?
Oh, I guess that's trying. Yeah. Don't be afraid, kids. We want your parents to be afraid, but we want you to be feeling safe and secure. Okay, we'll be back after our traffic news break, weather. We've got Sam Quinton going to tell you how it is driving around.
Yeah, we'll have some summer fun in the next hour.